Hello, Growcast listeners. It is contest time. In case you didn't hear, we are giving away 2 months of the upcoming membership program scheduled to launch June 1st, just for rating and reviewing the show. We've now bumped it up to 3 lucky reviewers will win 2 months of the membership program at the highest level. So that's right. 3 of you are going to get a bunch of awesome prizes and a chance to win even more prizes by being entered into the membership program just by rating and reviewing the show. Just take a snapshot of your rating and review and email it to contact@growcastpodcast.com to be entered. Make the subject rating, and you will be entered to win. Everyone who's already sent theirs in, you're entered. You're good to go. Thank you for responding. We look forward to giving that out. June 1st is the current target date. We are on track. We will update you if that changes. We love each and every one of you. Shout out to Rob Smith, who's experiencing some health issues, but he's getting better. Everyone, please send him some love. He needs it right now. Thank you all so much for listening. I appreciate it. And without further ado, enjoy the show. Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to Growcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Please tell a friend about the show. It's how we grow. We really appreciate it. And if you really want to help us out, give us a positive rating and review on iTunes or whatever podcast app you use to listen to us. We've got a great guest on the phone today from Terpenes and Testing. Jason Lupoy is on the line. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing good, Jordan. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, man. Thank you for agreeing to come on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate you asking me to.
So let's talk a little bit about Terpenes and Testing. How did it get started? And maybe some background on yourself.
Yeah, so I'll start with the magazine. So I was not on board when the magazine officially kicked off, but the publisher of this magazine and several others that are targeting the cannabis industry, such as Extraction Magazine, which I also edit, there was a need for knowledge in the space. There's a lot of anecdotal sort of information there about the plant. You know, this industry wasn't always, in people's minds the way it is today. Mm-hmm. Often it was, underground. And so I think that's where the need for something to come out and be a sort of go-to source, not only for knowledge, but for entertainment regarding, cannabis and botanical extractions. I think there was just a need for that. And Celeste Miranda is the publisher of Mace Media. Or the owner of Mace Media and the publisher of Terpenes and Testing and Extraction Magazine and a couple of other magazines. Mm-hmm. And I think Celeste is kind of a visionary in the cannabis industry, always kind of a step ahead of, what the need is. And so I came on board at Terpenes and Testing, I think it was about last February, about a year or so ago. And I was someone who got the emails, the blog post updates, the newsletters from the publisher. And, I found myself really interested in what they were doing. I had a little bit of exposure to the cannabis industry in a previous job. And I knew that this was an area that I really strongly wanted to be in and was very passionate about.
Right.
I've got a PhD in analytical chemistry. And, for a while I was working with plants, not cannabis, but trees and other types of plants that would be well suited for biofuel or bio-based material applications.
Oh, nice.
And so it was there that I really started to like working with plants and kind of, as an analytical chemist, often you're not working with plants, that's for sure.
So what were you like in like pharma or like flavor? What were you working in?
So I was working for two national labs, Lawrence Berkeley National Lab and the National Renewable Energy Lab.
Oh, that's cool.
And, those were both postdoctoral positions. The one at Lawrence Berkeley was on behalf of the University of Queensland. So there was this Australian research group, a very well-known plant geneticist, and they wanted to study eucalyptus trees and other types of trees common to Australia for biofuel applications.
That's neat.
Yeah, that's kind of what I did in graduate school and at both postdocs. So I had this affinity for plants. And, you know, I always wondered, like, who's doing the science in the cannabis industry? What's going on in the cannabis industry?
And I mean, is there any cooler plant as far as the compounds within it?
I would,
coffee kind of rivals it. I think coffee and cannabis are the top two most interesting in my book. Well, what do you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you would mention coffee, because the plant geneticist that I worked for would always say that that's the second most traded commodity in the world behind
it
oil.
Is. Yeah. It is. Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's the complexity of cannabis is something that significantly interests me. You know, I'm currently writing a book on terpenes, and, you know, reading that a lot of plants will produce terpenes if they, you know, if an insect perhaps lays eggs on the leaf of a plant, the plant can sense that and it starts producing terpenes to attract a predator.
Wow.
Leaving those eggs. This is kind of like a fragrant warfare. And I think stuff like that just amazes me about plants in general. But, you know, given the with cannabis, you've got all these other molecules in the plant that can serve some kind of medicinal benefit. I'd say this is definitely by far the most interesting plant that I've had the privilege to study.
That's really cool. Yeah. People don't realize the important role that terpenes play all around us. I was speaking with my one friend who is actually an analytical scientist by trade, interestingly enough, but he was talking about a theory that pine trees release alpha pinene when they're exposed to too much sun. When they get too hot, they release alpha pinene into the atmosphere. And the theory is that alpha pinene seeds clouds to cover them from the sun.
Oh, yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
So yeah, just little things like that. It's just like, it's mind blowing. And that's no different than the alpha pinene in your cannabis. So it's really fascinating.
Yeah. You know, and I kind of liken it. You don't really expect to hear that plants are producing these types of molecules to caution other plants either. That's another, you know, thing that I've been studying, how terpenes can be released by a plant to let other plants know, hey, you know, that something's not right. And that's of like plants being alive, or, you know, something out of like M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening or something like that.
No, totally. And that's incredible. What you're describing is a form of communication. So that's really fascinating stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I want to talk about, though, these audits that you do. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that you've worked in auditing testing labs. Is that true?
Yeah. So, you know, I work with Terpenes and Testing and Extraction Magazine. And then my day job, if you will, is working for a company here in the Pittsburgh area that does third-party lab audits for cannabis testing labs.
So third party commissioned by who?
So the state that we are in currently is Washington. So we're commissioned by the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board.
Okay, nice. Nice. That's fascinating stuff, because we've had, you may be familiar with Evio Labs, Anthony Smith.
Yeah, absolutely. I know Anthony.
Yeah, you know, we had him on and we were talking about, you know, testing and all that stuff. But you're the guy who comes in and sees how he's doing and kind of critiques him. So I kind of have some questions for you regarding those audits.
Yeah, fire away.
Which markets, which companies, who's impressing you when you're doing these audits?
Well, you know, I'd say, and this may sound like, you know, I'm backpedaling or something, but I'm not. I mean, I think that really all the labs we go into impress me in some way. And recently we've gone into several labs that really have exemplified what I would say is a very strong and responsible evolution in the cannabis industry. Mm. Because, you know, obviously we live in the days of doom and gloom media being the what sells. And I think that there's been a lot of attention paid to laboratories. Often labs can be scapegoats. When, you know, something goes wrong, you know, something's contaminated or whatnot. And I think that, you know, what I've seen, and really the Washington market is a bit different. You know, we've got a checklist that we, I think it's got like 350 different items. When we go into a laboratory, there's 350 items that we look at. And I think that's, you know, I don't think a lot of people understand that there's a really strong sense of trying to make sure that labs are compliant. And I think it's not like we're henchmen of the state. Rather, we try to serve as an effective liaison between the lab and the regulatory yes. body.
I like that. That's very important, that work that you're doing. And I don't want to butt in too quickly, but when you have these 350 points, are your clients, are the people you're auditing rather, are they surprised by this? Like, are they,
well,
do any of these points surprise them?
That's a great question. And unfortunately, I'd say more often than not, they are.
Well, I'd imagine so.
Well, the thing of it is that the checklist, the test, as it were, is freely, you know, it's available on the Washington State Liquor and Cannabis Board's website.
Oh, okay.
We just had a webinar at Terpenes and Testing, and I was talking a little bit about these audits, and some people were interested in it. And within 2 minutes, I was able to grab the link and toss it on the screen for everybody to have a look at and download. And that's the thing. You know, a lot of the labs where when we've gone into and there's been some deficiencies, and it's not uncommon. You know, I work in a laboratory and we get audited all the time. And, you know, auditors feel like if they don't come up with something, you know, they didn't do their job, sure. I guess. And there's always a few things that you could use a little bit of help on, or maybe you forgot. It's very common. But some labs, you know, they just might not have consulted that checklist. And we highly recommend that if you know we're coming in, and labs, you know, by and large know when we're coming in, spend some time going through the checklist and just make sure you've got everything done. You know, it's an open book test, basically.
Yeah, that's really funny that you get to witness that side of the industry. It must be a really unique perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I think
that's fascinating stuff.
I think it's a cool perspective because, you know, I think that all of us, you know, when we buy products, we kind of blindly place trust in the product labels. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, I think there's been a lot, you know, a little bit overemphasis on potency. I'd rather see states, you know, initiating across the board testing requirements that, you know, evaluate whether something's, you know, toxic for consumption, you know, like pesticides or residual solvents, things like that. Believe it or not, some states don't have that fully across the board for their testing, whether it be medical or rec.
Wow.
And that's, yeah, I mean, it's kind of unsettling, but, you know, I think that what our goal is to try to help labs do better science and to make sure that, you know, everybody in the cannabis ecosystem, whether you're growing the product or whether you're ingesting the product, you know, you can trust the data that the lab is putting out. It's defensible. I mean, that's kind of what the overall idea is behind the audits.
Yeah, I love that. Let's talk about this shift. I talk about it with a lot of my guests. You just nailed it on the head. Everyone was going for the high THC breeds. And now, I mean, as evident by a company like yours called Terpenes and Testing, you know, I like the one you work with rather. The focus is shifting. Right? It's shifting towards the terpenes. It's shifting towards flavor. It's shifting towards aroma. It's shifting towards production practices and sustainability. Do you see that shift happening? Is it widespread, or am I just kind of immersed in it?
No, I think it's widespread. You know, I was presenting a seminar once in the back of a Chinese buffet, and it was weird because it was the Society of Analytical Chemists, and yet we were in the back of this Chinese buffet. And you know, I've presented in weirder places, so it was not really a big deal. And we, you know, one of the questions that I was asked was, are these terpenes really medicinal? And I'm thinking, like, wow. So like I had mentioned, I'm working on a terpene book kind of for a general audience. You know, if you're familiar with our content, you know, pretty much the same level of digestibility is our content. And there's just hundreds and hundreds of articles, you know, thousands of scientific articles on terpenes specifically without having to do anything with cannabis. And, you know, like you were talking about the pinene in the forest, and there's been studies of what's called forest bathing, where people go out into the forest and bathe in the forest, basically. And they've been actually, when they come back into their urban environments and they have their blood evaluated, they've actually shown increased levels of pinene just because they've spent some time in the forest. And I think that people started to realize that when you have like the synthetic cannabinoid dronabinol or Marinol, and you start to hear people say, you know, I feel better if I just smoke it. And I think that's where people started to, you know, perhaps anecdotally say that there's we need to have more of these compounds, and perhaps even if it's less of a potency. And when you start looking at all the different anti-cancer properties of terpenes, and you know that cannabinoids have already been, even cancer.gov talks about cannabinoids preferentially attacking cancerous cells, you know, it just makes sense to have more of that whole plant there. I mean, that's the way it is naturally for a reason. And I think that that's where a lot of people are going back to. They want to recreate those flavors and aromas of the original cultivar, but they want to have that in the concentrate now and get a little bit higher of the cannabinoids. And I think that's really, you know, across the globe, from people that I've talked to, there's people that are really interested in reintroducing terpenes, and maybe in, you know, not even trying to recreate the original plant, but they're trying to recreate, or they're trying to create a specific feeling.
Yes.
You know, so I think that it's definitely a very widespread practice nowadays.
It's about the outcome a lot of the time. It's about the overall outcome and the consistency. That's what I've heard, you know, the market kind of taking a turn towards that direction. But when you're telling people, when you're enlightening people on information like this, do they listen to you?
I hope so.
Well, you know what I mean. Do you get a bunch of pushback? Do you get, or people?
No. So I taught a course here to senior citizens at Carnegie Mellon University. It's a group called the Osher Lifelong Learning. And it's, I think it's at a lot of other universities, but this happened to be a group that attended Carnegie Mellon. And, you know, at first when I said it, they asked why I said, you know, I'm here to teach a course about cannabis. And nobody really knew what I was talking about because, you know, of course they all know it as marijuana or some other term. And, you know,
grass.
We were here to talk about science. And so we've banned terpenes, and testing has banned the word marijuana for many content. And so
I like that.
Yeah. And, you know, these people were very receptive. You know, and it was a three-day course, hour and a half per day. I knew they weren't going to want to hear 4.5 hours of chemistry and science from me. So I got a lawyer, local Pittsburgh lawyer, Patrick Nightingale, to, you know, do the legal side of things and kind of set the stage. And they were just stunned by some of the things that he was saying to them. I went second, and then I had a medical doctor, Brian Donner, who, you know, I kind of felt like, well, if these people, if these students want to register, then he's right here. So if they liked what we
here's
said,
the upsell. Yeah.
They could just sign right up, I guess.
I love it.
I think that just having the conversation, you know, we did an article about this course. And, you know, it's amazing that when you go back to the days of Anslinger 80 odd years ago, we've had 88 years of this reefer madness nonsense that's finally being dispelled and obliterated as it should have been. We're now getting back to, you know, resurrecting our ancient knowledge about this plant. And I think that, you know, these people were so receptive to what we were saying that in 4.5 short hours, I think we basically squashed decades of misinformation that they had heard. And I think that's what it's really about, is just having the conversation.
Yeah, that's a good point. I got to take a little break for our advertisers, and we'll be right back. Today's show is brought to you by Gracious Jewels, everybody. Handmade crystal jewelry. They've got some fantastic pieces. Just go to growcastjewels.com to make sure that they know that we sent you. Check out their mushroom necklaces, huge seller, so cool. Their cannabis leaf necklaces, perfect for you listeners. They're a wonderful, wonderful gift. They beat the crap out of any other jewelry because they're affordable. and they're unique and they're handmade. You just can't beat it. So go over there, check them out. They got a bunch of great real stones. This isn't some crappy glass bead stuff. We're talking real amethyst here, labradorite, a lot of cool stuff they got going on. growcastjewels.com. And like I said, check out their mushroom necklaces. It's their hottest seller. They look awesome. Mushrooms growing out of crystals. Everybody loves them. They're going like hotcakes. Listen, it's the perfect gift for a loved one or for yourself. So go and get it now. Just go to growcastjewels.com. And we're back, everybody. Jason, I wanted to move back into the testing side of things. You know, when it comes to cannabis testing for potency or testing for, you know, mycotoxins or pesticides, whatever it is, how has the technology changed over the years? Can you kind of explain to a layperson like me how the process works? You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, technology, just like anything, it advances, you know, experiments that people used to run that might have taken a half an hour now might be below 10 minutes. So they're able to run more samples. Costs have come down for some things, you know, so there's more accessible to a cannabis lab. And companies like Shimatsu are putting out, you know, turnkey or, you know, really user-friendly instrumentation that you don't really need to have such a heavy scientific or analytical chemistry background to be able to run the machines.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, and I think that you know, really the process is you know, it's not simple, but it is simple in words. You know, where there's a type of instrumentation called chromatography that's kind of the workhorse in the industry. And, you know, the way it works, chromatography, when things are highly volatile or easy to turn these molecules into a gas. So terpenes are perfect for that because you can already smell them. So they're already quite volatile or in the gaseous state. And then other things like cannabinoids, people will use something called liquid chromatography. And that's basically all chromatography is doing is it's taking your whole sample and it's basically fractionating it or separating it out into its individual mm-hmm. constituents. And then you can identify those individual constituents by running, you know, standards. And these are samples that are, you know, certified by companies that vend them, you know, like a Sigma Aldrich or a ResTech. They sell these standards to the laboratory. The lab first measures those standards and they see how good their methods are. They validate their methods and then they start to build out calibrations on those standards. And so they're just measuring different concentrations of the product. And then they're running their client's sample to see where that falls. And that's really how, you know, a generalized version of what's done. They're just kind of separating out a sample mm-hmm. to see what's in it. They'll do microbial testing. And there's, you know, there's different ways of going about doing that. You know, they'll do things like pesticides. They'll use more sophisticated instrumentation, definitely more expensive instrumentation to run things like heavy metals or pesticides.
Interesting.
I think, you know, more and more now we're starting to see people be, as we mentioned earlier, interested in the terpenes.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff. So it's like if you're doing, you know, cannabinoids and terpenes, you're kind of separating and then weighing them against each other. You know, this percentage was this, that percentage was that. Whereas with mycotoxins and pesticides, it's kind of like a pass fail, like a disease test, positive or negative sort of thing, right?
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, often people are you know, they're talking about a weight percent. You know, this cannabinoid was this percent by weight of the plant. Same with terpenes, you know, and with the pesticides, there are thresholds, you know, a certain number of parts per million or parts per billion that are permissible. And then, you know, of course, samples have to be at or below that threshold to pass, you know, and different states have different levels, which makes it kind of a challenge. It's not the same across the board.
How do you feel about those levels as an analytical scientist?
Well, I mean, I think that really the main thing is that, you know, even when you take vitamins, I bought vitamins once and it said, you know, because of a proposition in California, they had to tell you these may contain lead, right? And really, anything that's in the ground can contain things like heavy metals. It's just a matter of knowing that it's not at an egregious level that could make someone sick. I think, and it's not like it's well. It's not like I'm saying, well, as long as you only have a little bit, it's you'll be fine. You don't want to have any, right?
Only but a little bit of mercury.
You know, some states are like we recently did an article about Canada. Canada's got a pretty long list of pesticides, but they've also got a long list of allowable pesticides. And then you look at California, for example, which. You know, the only permissible things from a list that I've seen have been fairly, you know, non-toxic things. Uh-huh. Some terpenes were on the list, things like neem oil and more natural things than you know, the standard type of pesticide that you think about. And yet, you know, in California, they're actually measuring less pesticides, I believe, than what Canada is. So it's kind of a weird scenario where California is not allowing so many different types of pesticides that Canada is allowing, but California is also not testing to see if they're there, whereas Canada is testing those things. It's kind of a weird scenario, but I think that's where, you know, I think analytical lab and industry standardization needs to come into play. Mm-hmm. Where there's, you know, and there's groups of scientists like ASTM International, where they're putting together standardized methods that labs can adopt, and then all labs are kind of doing the same thing. And in, you know, it'd be nice to see a standardized pesticide list. You know, I live here in Pennsylvania. And for the longest time, Pennsylvania did not release a pesticide list, yet labs were open and they were required to measure pesticides. Oh. So they didn't know what to measure.
Right.
And so they started looking at other states to see what other states were doing. And you know, I guess they were kind of picking one that they felt was robust and they used that. And
yeah, piggybacking. Yeah.
So I think you know, that's one of the most important tests that there is. And I think that when you see some of these levels be lower than other states, you kind of wonder why.
Right.
You know, why would a state allow more of a pesticide? It kind of has a weird vibe to it.
But as a layperson, I don't know if that, you know, one part per million versus two parts per million or versus one part per billion, you know, it's as a layperson, I don't know that kind of impact, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, to be honest, I don't either. You know, I think that's where like toxicology comes right. into play.
Right.
And, you know, I would imagine when they're setting thresholds like this, that they're considering, you know, the safety data sheets on these products and saying like, well, what's the lethal dose and what doses might be okay. But, you know, I hesitate to say any dose of a pesticide unless it's, you know, a very natural pesticide, you know,
okay.
And not.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, right. I agree with that. Are pesticides kind of like steroids in athletes, though? Aren't they just going to find the next one if one is being tested for or banned? Or do they not come out that frequently? And are they not really developed like that?
Well, you know, I think that a lot of people in this industry, at least from what I've seen and the people that I've talked to, they care about the plant a little bit more than that. And I think that they have a respect for the plant and the people that are relying
for sure.
on them to
yeah.
produce a good product. And so I hope that that's not the case where people will just turn to the next one and then the next one down the line. But unfortunately, I think that that's something that can easily occur. You know, it's a matter of what pesticides are being tested for. And the more pesticides you test for, you know, perhaps like I was mentioning about Canada, the more pesticides you test for, the harder it's going to be for people to do that. But, you know, I'm not sure the number of total pesticides out there. This is where I love like seeing companies like Marrone Bio Innovations, where they're using natural substances, they're using plant-based or microbial-based pesticides,
mm-hmm.
and they really seem to be gaining some traction, especially when they started vending to the cannabis industry. And I think that lends credence to what I was saying, that a lot of people, they just share, like the respect that they have resonates across everything that they're doing. And I think that that's where we start seeing biopesticides and things of that nature become a lot more relevant.
Yeah, and I think it's just in time, too, and hopefully we can adopt that on a larger scale. to big ag too, you know, because we got to figure it out, you know?
Well, I think that you know, the whole, you know, I mean, 100 years ago, people weren't doing things the way we're doing things now. And it's mm-hmm. funny how we've kind of completed a cycle when we're going back to the way things were done. People yes. have a lot more interest in organic farming. You know, organic kind of has a weird connotation to it. Some people think it's a scam. But I think that the overall practices, especially for smaller farms that can do it more sustainably, that's what they're interested in. They're interested in that sort of thing. Farmers markets, you know, all that sort of thing. I think yep. you're seeing a big surge in, and that's what I like about the cannabis industry as well. And even the hemp industry is that I talk to these people all the time that say, I got tired of pharmaceuticals. I got tired of the standard sort of healthcare products. You know, I wanted to do something more natural for myself. And what better plant to do that with?
Is that what you like most about this work, knowing that you're making sure that this medicine and this product for recreation as well is safe for, you know, people at home and old people and, you know, citizens of the United States?
Yeah, I mean, that ranks very highly on my list of why I like being involved in the cannabis industry. And I think that, you know, when you see veterans or children or you know, your own loved ones of any age benefiting from the plant, it's I think even the biggest skeptic starts to pay attention.
Right.
And I think that not only that aspect of knowing that, you know, I'm doing my own part to try to help labs, you know, do better science to make sure that the products are properly evaluated at the end of the day. I think that for any PhD scientist, perhaps especially, being involved in an industry like the cannabis industry is not the norm. You know, you're typically in gas and oil or
right.
pharmaceuticals or something like that, especially as an analytical chemist. And I think that, you know, it's relatively few industries now probably zero industries are escalating as rapidly as the cannabis industry. It's becoming much more of a global phenomenon. It's not just North America or the United States and Canada. And I think that, you know, when you start to see all these people turning to it, you know, you start to see people leaving other fields to get involved.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
You know, even people at Terpenes and Testing that I've talked to, like John McKay, you know, he said before that when he first started visiting people in the cannabis industry, when he was at Waters, that he was just, you know, it was just remarkable to see the passion they had. And, you know, I've been in a lot of different labs and different, been with a lot of different types of people. And I can vouch for that there's just this sense of, you know,
unity.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's just like an overall passion for what you're doing. It's not a lot of like people that seem miserable or unhappy.
Right.
And that's something that I think is pretty remarkable. And I feel like if you have the chance to get involved and you truly can make a difference in the industry, because it's such a nascent industry that, you know, things are still in that evolution as opposed to an industry that's been around for 80 years. I mean, I think that's the most amazing thing about it to me.
I love it, man. Well, thank you so much for doing this. Where can we send listeners who are interested in terpenes and testing and interested in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So the two easiest places, I think, are terpenesandtesting.com and extractionmagazine.com. Those are the two magazines that I edit. You can also reach me at jason@terpenesandtesting.com.
Fantastic. All right, everybody out there, be safe and grow smarter.